Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
This whole DeMarcus Lawrence, Micah Parsons dialogue has got me cackling over here. Like, for DeMarcus Lawrence to say that, like, I was never going to win a Super Bowl in Dallas. Agree.
You spoke facts.
I agree with you. To think that you, by going to Seattle, you're now somehow on a contending team, I find that laughable, bordering on delusional.
Well, watch out, they have Cooper Kupp now, so you know.
That's right. They got Cooper Kupp and Sam Darnold. Let's get after it. Till the first time Sam Darnold contracts mono in Seattle and starts seeing ghosts again. What are you looking at me like I'm weird? You don't remember that?
No. What?
Sam Darnold, when he was quarterback in the Jets, he got like sacked like 7 or 8 times in a game. He had a horrendous game. And like in the press conference after the game, the reporters were asking him like, you know, Sam, what was going wrong? You know, in the pocket. And he's like, dude, I was seeing ghosts.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do remember that.
There was another one where he like contracted mono and everybody on social media lost their minds because like most of the time mono is contracted through like bodily fluids. And it was a whole thing with Sam Darnold there for a while and with the Jets, of course. And thankfully he ended up getting out of there and he was a backup in Carolina and San Francisco and then resurgent level play this past year with the Vikings, but I don't know. I mean, firstly, I will give him a little bit of credit. The Seahawks are going to be in a poor division next year. I mean, the Cardinals have good young pieces, but as long as Kyler Murray is their starting quarterback, I just don't see the Cardinals as a contender. The Niners are releasing everybody. Debo, Kyle Juszczyk.
You name it, they're gone.
Jalen Moore. Yeah, I mean, the only guys that are still around are Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Trent Williams, and Nick Bosa, and Fred Warner. Pretty much everybody else is gone. Talanoa Hufanga is gone. Dre Greenlaw is gone. Charvarius Ward is... Everybody's gone. Everybody's left San Francisco. Because they got to pay Brock Purdy. So I don't think San Francisco is going to be as good a team next year. The Rams keeping Stafford, I think that's good for them, right? You're going to have Nacua back. That young defense you had this year, as good as it was, I think they could be better next year. You get rid of Cooper Kupp. You bring in Devontae Adams. What is Devontae Adams going to look like? That's a question to be had. You still got Kyren Williams. I think the Rams are probably the favorite to win that division. But I think the Seahawks could very well finish second in that division now, based off of how much the Niners just lost, where the Cardinals are right now, and with some of the pieces that the Seahawks have added, if they work, if Darnold works, if DeMarcus Lawrence works, if Cooper Kupp works. But, you know, for Parsons to then go back at him and be like, you know, that's clown. You're acting like a clown. You're doing this and doing that. And, oh, yeah, sure. You say that on the way out the door versus when you were here, whatever. And then for DeMarcus Lawrence to then go back at him and say, you know, you may call me a clown or whatever, but He won't change the fact that I told the truth, and then says, maybe you spend less time tweeting and more time winning, I wouldn't have left. But then for DeMarcus Lawrence to then double down on the whole Super Bowl part of the conversation, and he told reporters yesterday, he's like, I always knew there was more left in me. Just thinking and wanting a Super Bowl, it doesn't all come together if all the pieces aren't there. For me to have another opportunity to go and chase my dream to win a Super Bowl with a good team and the pieces are in place, I had to take my opportunity. What pieces, DeMarcus? They traded DK. They cut Tyler Lockett. The Seahawks defense isn't great outside of like Sean Weatherspoon.
Maybe he hasn't been keeping up on the free agency news of his own team.
I guess not. He was so focused on his own that he didn't look at what the Seahawks... He arrived there expecting to see DK Metcalf in a 14 jersey, and he's like, why is Sam Darnold wearing 14? What's going... Where'd DK go?
He's on vacation, and it just hasn't been clued into the news yet. But I will say this, Seahawks have won a Super Bowl more recently than the Cowboys.
That's a fact.
So he's got one up on him there.
Yep. I'm 27 years old, and I have never witnessed the Cowboys win a Super Bowl.
I've never witnessed them be good.
It has not happened.
And they won't win one as long as Dak Prescott's the quarterback.
Seahawks aren't winning a Super Bowl. LMAO. Yeah, no, they're not. They're absolutely not. I don't know why DeMarcus Lawrence is saying that. I don't know who. I think they both look foolish in this exchange. I don't know which one looks more foolish. Probably Micah Parsons. Just let it go, dude. Just let it go. If you have that much of a problem with it, get a hold of DeMarcus. Have a conversation privately amongst yourselves. But based on the way this conversation and this interaction escalated, I don't think there's any love lost between these two dudes. I don't think they like each other. I think that's very, very evident based on the way that this thing went down on social media. 913-586-7965. That same person talking about the Seahawks not winning a Super Bowl said North Carolina came back. That they did. Tar Heels down 4. Duke's letting it slip away here a little bit. They were up 21 at halftime. It's now a 4-point game. UNC trails Duke 72-68. Just about two and a half minutes to go. We're quickly approaching the end of the SEC quarterfinal game between Mizzou and Florida. Mizzou's hanging around right now, right? They haven't come back, I wouldn't say, but they're hanging around. Tigers down 8 right now against Florida. What's the latest you got for us, Blake?
Right now, score Florida 80, Mizzou 72. Mizzou keeps, again, they're playing within that 10-point range. They keep hovering around about 6 points out. They've cut it to 4, but bad, dumb mistakes on Mizzou's end. And I'll tell you what, the refs are letting these teams play right now. And depending on how you feel, I like it. I like it when they just let them play. I don't want to see free throw basketball the whole game. They've also minimized the reviews, which I know has been kind of a complaint as well. They're not taking 3 minutes to review everything. So they're letting them play. Right now, Missouri's just kind of getting out physical, but they're hanging around. I mean, it's still, they've got every chance in the world.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. You look at the box score, look at the numbers. What stands out is the fact that Tigers aren't shooting the ball particularly well, and Florida is shooting the ball really well. Tigers are shooting 43% from the floor. They're 3 of 13 from behind the arc, 23%. Meanwhile, the Gators are shooting 64% from the floor, and they've knocked down 42% of their threes, 8 of 19. Mizzou is winning the turnover battle, 9 to 16. They are winning the rebounding battle. They have more steals in this game. They have shot more free throws than Florida by 1. Both teams have committed the same number of fouls, 18. By all intents and purposes, this is a very even game, aside from the fact that Mizzou is having a poor night shooting from the floor, and Florida is lights out right now. I mean, 64%, it's hard to beat a team that's shooting 60-plus from the field. That is a difficult thing to contend with. And right now, yeah, the lead's ballooned back out to 11 now for Florida. And, I mean, not a lot of interior presence for Mizzou. They do not have one shot block, and that, again, goes back to no Mark Mitchell tonight for Mizzou, where Florida is able to get the ball inside the paint and have a great deal of success. Mizzou has not blocked a shot. Florida's shooting 64% from the field. I think the loss of Mark Mitchell, primary cause and effect for both of those numbers being very low in terms of blocks, very high in terms of field goal percentage, and why Mizzou is down 11 in this game. But Anthony Robinson and Tony Perkins turning it on a bit here in the second half. Tony Perkins is up to 13 points. Anthony Robinson is up to 13 points himself. Tamar Bates is having a rough shooting night. He's 7 of 18. Caleb Grill also having a poor shooting night. He's 2 of 7, 1 of 4 from behind the arc. Has he played much in the second half? Caleb Grill, has he played much?
He's playing. They just haven't been getting the ball on the perimeter. Florida's doing a really good job with their perimeter defense right now. And you were talking about the inside presence. Josh Gray got into foul trouble about midway through the second half. So he's their 7-footer down low. They haven't been able to do anything other, you know, and they're getting out rebounded in the second half pretty bad.
Mm. Yeah, now it's a 13-point lead. Mizzou trails 85-72 as we approach the under 4 timeout of that one. So it seems like the quarterfinal leg is going to be the end of the road for the Mizzou Tigers here in the SEC tournament. But like I said, I think they're a 5 or 6 seed coming up in the NCAA tournament when we get to Selection Sunday.
As we say that, Caleb Grill finally knocks down about a 45-footer.
That makes sense.
Like, where?
He has got one of the greenest lights I have ever witnessed for a bench player in my life. I mean, he's a starter talent.
Yes.
He is a bench player for this Mizzou team because that's the role that he fits the best. The scoring that he provides you off the bench makes so much sense for this Mizzou team. When you're looking at stretches, like starting a game with Caleb Grill and Tamar Bates on the floor at the same time, it's hard because there's only one basketball. And when you've got Tamar Bates and Caleb Grill and Mark Mitchell all on the floor at the same time, those guys eat up shots. And when you can bring in Caleb Grill off the bench to give you a spark, it makes so much sense for them. And it's been incredibly effective. But when he's not shooting the ball well, he doesn't wow you defensively, it becomes questionable. But that dude pulls up as confident as I've ever seen a role player from 30 plus. It's unreal.
And watch out because he's hit one now, like I said, from about 5 feet in front of half court, right, Josh? Or right, Jason? Yeah, you know what? He's one of those guys that it's streaky. If he hasn't hit, he's not doing anything. But as soon as he gets one, he starts feeling himself. They got about 3.5 minutes left. Let's see if he can start pulling up. He just hasn't been able to get the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. A minute left now in this Duke UNC game. Blue Devils are up by 3, 72-69. And I'll be curious if, because Caleb Flagg didn't play tonight for the Blue Devils. They are more likely than not going to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament unless they were to lose tonight, for example. If they lose tonight and Auburn ends up winning the SEC tournament, then maybe you see a change there from a number one overall seed perspective, but they'll both be ones regardless. Duke wins tonight. This is the semifinals of the ACC tournament. Does Cooper Flagg play tomorrow in the ACC tournament championship? That's an interesting one to me. That's a dilemma, I think, for Coach Shire and the Blue Devils. Do you risk him re-aggravating that injury, rushing him a little bit to try to win an ACC tournament, or do you allow him to continue to rest and get set for an NCAA tournament where you are probably the favorite, I would say, right now to win a national championship? That's going to be a fascinating one to watch. 913-586-7965. Somebody in the text line said, if Duke hangs on, I'm 4 legs away from a 19-leg parlay. Woo! 19 leg. What's the payout on that bad boy? What'd you put in? What's the payout on a 19-leg parlay?
That's one of those parlays I put in $1.
Yeah.
Just $1.
Just a couple bucks.
Walk away with like $3,000.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I admittedly don't do a lot of sports betting. I don't know if it's that like I don't get that invested yet. Maybe some of it is that like I live in Missouri and sports betting hasn't really been legal in Missouri. Like the underdog fantasy and some of that, you know, the DraftKings champions or whatever, that little, I don't know. I just never really have gotten very deep into it. I like doing it when I do, right? $5, $10 here or there, nothing big. And I've won a few times. I've also lost a few times and just the nature of the beast, but that's how it goes. I've never gotten super deep into sports betting, but I might eventually if my wife will let me.
A buddy of mine, we did during the NFL season, we pick the winners, over under spread and or money line for every NFL game for each week. But we only put in $1.
Mm.
So it's a 16 leg parlay. You put in $1 at the end of the year, essentially, if you're playing during the regular season. If you lose everyone, you only lose $18.
Yeah,
but every week the parlays, if they hit, are thousands of dollars.
Right, exactly.
So like it's fun. It makes you interested in games you might not be interested in. You get red zone going. So it's a fun thing to do. Most I ever won was actually on the Royals. It was like $200 on an 8 leg parlay.
Yeah. I like that. And that
covered all of my losses ever. And I think I've been playing off that ever since.
Yeah, and I think there's something to that. Like I've put some money down for like NBA games because I'm a Celtics fan, but I'm not the biggest. I'm a huge basketball fan. It's my favorite sport, but I'm not the biggest NBA fan out there. So I like to put some money down every once in a while on a couple of NBA games or whatever that I know are going to be on TV because it allows me to get a little bit more invested. I feel like there's folks that do that with the NFL, but like I play fantasy football. So I get invested in other NFL games, not because of sports betting, but because of fantasy football, which I'm in three different leagues. There is a pool. So it's sports betting in a different respect anyway. So I understand, kind of allows you to get involved in games you might not otherwise be paying that much attention to. Clarification, that guy who put that 19-leg parlay together said he put in a buck, and if it hits, it's $600. That's a good ROI. That's a respectable ROI. No doubt about it. More coming up here. I want to talk about KU losing last night against Arizona, what it could mean for their seeding coming up in the NCAA tournament, and a whole lot more here on the program. I also want to talk about the fact that for those who listen to the show regularly and have been following, my wife and I have been in the process of buying a house. We closed on our house on last Friday, and we actually officially moved into our home today. So we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along here tonight as well. Logan Weber alongside my producer for tonight's show, Blake Schneiders. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views, on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So it's going to be an SEC quarterfinal finish for the Missouri Tigers. About 30 seconds left. Mizzou down 16 against Florida, 95-79. For Kansas, it was a loss yesterday in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament as they lost to Arizona in a game that they started out, they had a rough first half. They made a big run in the second half, took the lead at one point, and then it kind of fell apart for them again, probably in the last 6-7 minutes of the ball game. They end up losing 88-77. Zeke Mayo finished with 20 points. He was Kansas's best player yesterday. I mean, he had a stretch there where he hit four straight threes, and the last couple were just wow sort of shots that he buried. And that's the Zeke Mayo that I think KU fans wanted to see all year, and they didn't always see it. And I thought it was very, very cool for Zeke Mayo to have that kind of response in that game against Arizona yesterday after all the stuff he had to deal with last week with the horrific messages that he received via social media that were racist in nature, that were calling for him to, and I'm not making this up, kill himself or wishing that he would die. I mean, just crazy things. Absolutely ridiculous reactions for grown men and women to be making about an 18 to 22 year old kid playing a game. So for him to bounce back and respond the way he did yesterday was pretty cool. Hunter Dickinson had another double double, 19 and 12, but he didn't shoot the ball particularly well. He was 8 of 18. DeJuan Harris had a good shooting night, which is kind of a surprise. He's not known as a scorer, but he had 16. He hit four threes in that game yesterday. He only attempted four threes, but turnovers, especially in that second half, were really the undoing for Kansas. Dickinson had three turnovers. Zeke Mayo turned it over three times as well. DeJuan Harris had a couple turnovers. AJ Storr played bad yesterday. He played bad basketball yesterday. It was not great. 9 minutes. He was 0 for 2, didn't score, turned the ball over twice, and committed a foul. Did not have a rebound, did not have an assist, did not have a steal, did not have a block. He recorded two missed field goals, including a missed three-pointer, two turnovers, and a foul. That was his stat line in 9 minutes of basketball. Rough one. And for Arizona, they played well enough to win. They shot over 50% from the field. They knocked down 44% of their threes. They put in 18 of 21 free throws. Just a rough one for KU in that one. And now you look at 21 and 12. Where does this Mizzou team sit? Or this KU team sit, excuse me. I believe firmly on the 7 seed line. That's where I think Kansas is. Maybe based on their brand name, they could sneak onto the 6 seed line, but I think that's very unlikely. I think the 7 seed is where Mizzou deserves to, or KU, goodness, where Kansas deserves to be, and that's where they'll end up. And again, I think Mizzou is a 5 or a 6. Even with this loss to get tonight to Florida, you got to the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. You lost to the 4th-ranked team in the country, a borderline 1 seed. Take that as what you will. Speaking of 1 seeds, 913-586-7965 is our number. 913 in the text line said, if Auburn wins the SEC tournament, they're the number one overall no matter what Duke does. I agree with you to a point. Based on the numbers, if Auburn wins the SEC tournament, yes, they should be the number one overall seed. If Auburn was to win and get to the SEC or the SEC tournament championship and win the SEC tournament, right? Because they beat Auburn tonight, 62-57. They are now 28-4. They are 16-4 in quad one games. They win tomorrow. They win on Sunday. They will be presumably 18-4 in quadrant one games this year. 6-0 in quad two, 2-0 in quad three, 4-0 in quad four. Duke, meanwhile, if they are to win the ACC tournament, which looks like they're going to beat North Carolina tonight. 74-71 is the score. Blue Devils up with 1 second or 2 seconds left. Even if Duke was to win tonight, win tomorrow, they would be 9-3 in quad one games. So Auburn would have twice as many quad one wins as Duke. Only one more loss, winning a conference that is better top to bottom. The SEC is a better basketball conference this year than the ACC. So yes, based off of the numbers, yes. But numbers aren't everything with college athletics. And what I mean by that is brand. In college sports, brand matters, folks. Georgia and Alabama's 2-loss teams get in to the college football playoff, right? Even if there's a 1-win team in another high major conference, that, you know, Florida State last year, right? I still think Florida State should have got in. Would they have gotten mollywopped had they gotten to the college football playoff? Dude, yeah, absolutely. But they went undefeated and they won their conference. They were 13-0. They deserve to get in. I don't care that their starting quarterback blew his knee out. They deserve to get in. Duke is a name brand in college basketball. They have the best player in college basketball in Cooper Flagg, the guy who is going to be the number one overall pick coming up here in, I believe it's July is when the NBA draft is. And as much as we don't want to admit it, as much as we don't want it to be a part of the lexicon of college athletics, it is. So if the committee is looking at a 30-3, 31-3 Duke team, and then they're looking at a 30-4 Auburn, they may end up leaning more towards Duke because Duke is the brand name. Oh, Duke is a team that we can, you know, get behind being the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. If the numbers are that close, right, if they're looking at it on paper in the eye test and the analytics and everything, has Auburn and Duke 1A and 1B, they're going to give the nod to Duke. Not saying that's what I want. I think Auburn should be the number one overall seed based off of what they've done this season in a better league. But I don't know if they will. 913-586-7965 is our number. About a half hour left here on the program tonight of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Blake Schneiders. This is your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Question. So the report is that the Cincinnati Bengals might actually open up the coin purse for once. Yeah, they open it up to pay Joe Burrow, but everybody pays their quarterback nowadays. The Niners are about to give Brock Purdy $55 million a year, so that's nothing new. But Adam Schefter reported earlier today that the Bengals are closing in on deals for both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. For initial reactions, that's going to be a lot of money. A lot of money. The latest that they're reporting on is that Ja'Marr Chase is going to make anywhere between $41 and $45 million per year. Now, of course, this all stems from the fact that the Bengals had said they want to make Ja'Marr Chase the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And then the Browns give Myles Garrett 4 years, $160 million, to make him the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. So with that, the price tag jumps. You've already made the statement publicly that Ja'Marr Chase is going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in league history. Kind of hard to go back on that, even though somebody just got 40 a year. So that's the first thing. Then you look at T. Higgins. And I believe, now I may have this incorrect, is it $27.5 million is the franchise tag T. Higgins signed at wide receiver? So if the extension is for more than that, then you could potentially, if you're the Bengals, If Jamar's making between 41 and 45, Burrow's making 50, and you're paying T. Higgins 30, 31, 32 a year, that's half your salary. Half your salary cap is going to three dudes. That's $130+ million going to Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, and Ja'Marr Chase. They're going to have the worst defense in football until the day those three retire.
We saw how bad it was last year.
It was a joke, man. And they're presumably going to lose Trey Hendrickson, who was the only bright spot to that defense. And Sam Hubbard retired.
I just still cannot believe all the gripe that they tried to give Chiefs fans for sitting out week 17, which is completely normal. And then also being like, oh, you guys were scared. You guys were scared. I was like, okay. You guys have you have one of the worst defenses in the league, and you lost to the Patriots.
Yeah. Guess what?
You're not helping yourself next year either. Bye bye, Burrow.
They were 15-1. Like, they had the best record in football. They had already clinched the one seed. What was the point in them playing anybody? Oh, we're gonna play all of our guys against the Broncos, risk their health in the postseason, just so that we can prevent the Broncos from making the playoffs. It's like, oh, they sat all their guys so that, you know, the Bengals wouldn't make the playoffs because they didn't want to see Cincinnati come the divisional round. Shut up, dude. Nobody's scared of you. Oh, great. Yeah, so that Mahomes and co. could put 30 on you? 40 on you? 50 on you? Your defense couldn't guard a wet paper bag. I don't want to hear it. And now they're definitely not going to be able to guard a wet paper bag. So looking at the numbers, Joe Burrow's cap hit for this season, right now, as it stands, $46.1 million. Let's lowball and say that you're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase $41 million a year. And let's say you get T. Higgins for 30. Put that all together, that is $117 million between those three guys. Woo! And you got to field the defense. They gave Mike Gesicki an extension. You got to protect Joe Burrow, because obviously you weren't doing that the first few years he was in the league, and his leg was in a proverbial cast every single year. I don't know, man. Do I think the Bengals should do this for Ja'Marr Chase? Yes. You can't afford to let Ja'Marr Chase go elsewhere. If I'm the Bengals with T. Higgins, I'd play him on the tag or trade him, if I'm being honest. Because you have holes you have got to get. Your defense was awful. T. Higgins being injured is not the reason you didn't make the playoffs. You could have had a completely healthy T. Higgins and probably still would have gone 9-8. The difference between you being an 11-6 or a 12-5 football team versus being the 9-8 football team that you were, your defense was awful, historically bad. Paying T. Higgins $30 million a year and paying Ja'Marr Chase $45 million a year, not going to help.
What really screwed the Bengals is they're trying to hold on to that same team that went to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, when this really was their opportunity to blow it up and restart while Joe Burrow is still young. You can do that. They had every opportunity, and now you've tied up so much money into the offense that there's no way you're going to be able to build your defense while Higgins and Chase are in their prime and Burrow's in their prime and be a competitor. You should have traded them off, got what you could for them, built up your capital, go and got some guys, and planned for 4 years down the line. And you're not going to have that now.
It's been proven you don't need a star wide receiver to win a Super Bowl. I know that
twice.
Yeah, I know that it's been that star wide receiver ones, and all these. I know that they've become hot commodities, especially in terms of contract value and what they bring. Because you think about the NFL today, it's a passing league. It's a quarterback driven league, and well, what do great quarterbacks need? They need wide receivers to throw the football to. Chiefs won two Super Bowls with rookie Rashee Rice and Juju Smith-Schuster as their top weapons. I just, like, that was their wide receiver one. Was the first Super Bowl, Juju Smith-Schuster was wide receiver one. And then last year, 2 years ago now, I guess you could say, Rashee Rice was wide receiver one. And Rashee Rice is an incredibly talented player. Am I paying Rashee Rice $40 million a year? No, I'm not. Ask Tom Brady how hard it was to win a Super Bowl without a wide receiver one.
And then how hard it was to win when he actually did have one.
Exactly.
Got snubbed twice.
Yeah, exactly. He had the best receiver he ever played with was Randy Moss. Lost in the Super Bowl with Randy Moss and Wes Welker.
In a record-breaking season.
He won six Super Bowls with the New England Patriots when his best receivers were like Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, and Brian Branch or something.
Deion Branch.
Brian Branch plays for the Lions. Yeah, and Deion Branch. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? Yes, I know he won a Super Bowl with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, too.
Do you know what also is a consistent in all of those equations? Just speaking about Chiefs and or Patriots, they had a defense.
Mm-hmm.
The saying defense wins championships really does, more time than not, ring true.
Maybe not the first Chiefs Super Bowl.
No, but they also had the most explosive offense. So, yeah. Like, it's they had the utmost on one side. They don't have the utmost on the
exactly.
Bengals.
Exactly. And I mean, to your point, though, the last two Super Bowl wins for the Chiefs, they had excellent defenses. Maybe their offenses weren't as explosive.
Top five defenses both times.
Exactly. And it goes back to that cliche.
And who just won? Eagles. Yep. Guess what? Number one defense.
Yes. I know it's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. Offense wins games. Defense wins championships. Okay? Joe Flacco has a Super Bowl ring. Trent Dilfer has a Super Bowl ring. Because they had great defenses. 913-586-7965 is our number. Hey, let me be the first to say, congratulations to Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Go get your money. Congratulations to the Cincinnati Bengals. You are going to be a very fun team to watch lose in the wild card game every year. And I can't wait to see it. Logan Weber alongside Blake Schneider is coming back one more time here on this Friday night. for After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
You know how in the game of golf, right when you're at your wit's end, all of a sudden there's that moment where you're 220 from the pin, you pull out your 6-iron, and you're thinking, "This, I'm done. I'm never playing golf again." And then you somehow hit an absolute stripe, and you put it 6 feet from the cup, and you're like, okay, like just when I think I'm out, it pulls me back in, right? Like that's the game of golf in a nutshell.
Yeah, that rarely happens to me. I'm usually a broken club in by that point, but yeah. Then you remember why you play the game.
Fair, fair. A couple of years ago, my best friend was getting married in Mexico, and one night we left the resort and we went to a golf course there in Mexico. And of course, we didn't bring our golf clubs with us, so we had to rent clubs or whatever. And we were having a really bad day. We were playing a 4-man scramble. It was going horrendously bad. And we were at the bottom of a hill. Hole was like 230 out. I grabbed a 5-iron, hit it. I had no idea where the ball landed. It was 3 feet from the cup. And I am a horrendous golfer. So I say all of that to say that I have the opposite situation occur with me every year when it comes to Colin Cowherd. Like Colin Cowherd will say something completely outlandish. And I'm like, okay, I'm out. And then he starts saying things that begin to make sense for me. And he reels me back in. And he reels me back in. And then he says something stupid again, and I'm like, okay, I'm out. You've lost me, Colin. And he's done it to me again. Colin Cowherd is talking about the NFL earlier this week with Danny Perkins. Of course, Danny, who we're all very familiar with, he's a former alum right here of Odyssey and 610. And they're talking about the AFC West. And Colin does what Colin has done for years now, and what everybody tends to do every year around this time of year. What does Colin Cowherd say this week? I think the Los Angeles Chargers are going to win the AFC West. Dude, when is it going to end? When are we going to stop with the Chargers? This is the year. This is the year. For the 17th year in a row, this is the year where the Chargers are going to dethrone the Broncos or the Chiefs, and they're going to win the AFC West. What on earth could possibly make you think that?
I would have maybe more respect for some of these analysts, even if they went with the Broncos. I wouldn't be as outlandishly, because we've seen time and time, tried and true, proven over and over again, the Chargers are not winning. Why don't you guys just go with the truth? It's most likely going to be the Chiefs. It has been for, feels like 10 years in a row now. And there's no drop-off. What have the Chargers done? What has Justin Herbert ever done that has been like, man, can't wait to see that guy in the playoffs? Oh, that's right. It's get their ass kicked this last year.
Yeah.
To a team that they should have beat.
Yes. It's losing a game against a banged up Texans team this year. A couple of years ago, it was picking up a massive lead against the Jacksonville Jaguars, where Trevor Lawrence throws 4 picks in the first half and then watching it collapse before your very eyes. And again, I had to do this last week. I defended Justin Herbert, because I think Justin Herbert's a really good quarterback. I think he is a borderline top 10 quarterback in this league. And the Chargers are a good football team. They are a playoff team. But until the day I see it, until the day that the Kansas City Chiefs are mathematically eliminated from winning the AFC West division title, and the Chargers are mathematically confirmed as the AFC West division title champions, I will not believe it. And I'm beginning to I think there's a correlation. Because it always happens, like somebody does it for the first time around this time of year, every single year. Mid-March, late March is the first time we start to see people throwing this around that the Chargers are, the Chargers, you know, they're going to compete with the Chiefs and win the AFC West. It happens around this year, every year, this time of year, every year. And I think it's the heat. I think like the first time it starts to get warm, people lose their collective minds for some reason. It got to 85 today in LA, and Colin's like, you know what? I think the Chargers got him. I think the Chargers got him this year. And I don't know if some of it is that Colin is in Los Angeles. He's in that market. So maybe he's just trying to fan the flame.
The heat's getting to him.
I guess, like, dude, you said. It's got to be. I cannot understand the delusion here.
It's all the vegan food.
I guess. Herbert's a good quarterback. Justin Herbert is legitimately a quality quarterback, as the power quite literally just went out in our studio. We have no lights in here, but that's right.
I'm pretty sure we're still rocking, though.
We are. We got the backup Jennies running the show here. What a way to end it. What a way to end a Friday night. Colin Cowherd's being a moron, talking about the Chargers are going to win the AFC West, and apparently Colin heard me, and he killed the power in our studio. I don't know. Wild stuff. Somebody just said, that I'm familiar with, one of my dad's buddies, just said, no way you hit a 5-iron 230 yards. Maybe it was a 3-wood on a good day. I didn't have a 3-wood in the bag, man. I'm telling you. Maybe it wasn't a 5-iron. Maybe it was a 4-iron. But I gave it everything I had because I was fed up, dude. Someone said Cowherd is a hack. Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago, one of my biggest beefs with Colin Cowherd was in 2015 when Iowa went undefeated in the college football season, and he called them the fake ID of college football. God, it made me so mad. Was he right? Yes. Because they lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten championship game and then got boat raced by Stanford, is what it is. All right. Lights or no lights, that'll do it for us tonight here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside my producer, Blake Schneiders. Appreciate you guys joining us. We'll be back with you again on Monday, right here on 96.5 The Fan.
I also want to give a quick shout out to Jason High for helping me. I was training him today, and he got to run half the show. So good job, Jason High.
Appreciate you, Jason. Lights came back on, but we're out for tonight's show here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.